So I'm going to tell a semi-story as a beginning of this. And I call it a semi-story because what we often find in the discourses of the Buddha is we find the context is set up for the Buddha to teach. And that context is a little story about who the Buddha encounters and their situation, what they ask him. And then the Buddha responds. And so it's not really a full-blown story, but the semi-story that begins this teaching, that initiates this teaching, is the people of Kalama. The Buddha has this very famous text called the Kalama Sutta, and for some people it's their absolute favorite discourse of the Buddha. And there was a wonderful Zen teacher by the name of Yvonne Rand, who is now dead, but she was very much involved in trying to address the ethical issues in Western Buddhism in the United States here in the 70s, 80s, 90s. A very ethical, wonderful teacher. And she made a rather dramatic statement that this particular discourse, the Kalama Sutta, everyone should have it tattooed on the inside of their eyelids. So she wanted people to always know it and have it close by. And one of the reasons for this is that what I'm going to teach in a moment is a protection against some of the more dangerous ways that people can adhere to religious teachings. It doesn't have to be dangerous, but historically in human history, there's people that are here for these reasons can create tremendous problems. So anyway, the Buddha is in the territory of the Kalamas, and they come out to see him, and they ask him a question. They say, in our town, lots of different religious teachers of different kinds come through, and they all kind of are saying, this is the truth. This is the truth, and whatever everybody else is saying is not true. And how is it, Buddha, that we can discern, know which of these teachers is teaching the truth and which of them is not? So what criteria can we use for understanding who's teaching the truth or not? And so the Buddha first offers criteria that we should not use for this purpose. And then he does a very interesting thing. He changes directions, or he puts aside this question about truth and untruth to offer something which for him is more primary. So the criteria that you should not go by, you should not use for deciding what is true and false, is to go by tradition, the religious tradition that you're part of, the teaching lineage. So you shouldn't go because it's traditional. The lineage, you know, your particular teacher, your teacher and your teacher's teacher, just because you're adhered to this particular lineage, political party, whatever it might be, don't take that as automatically as true. Don't go by true because it's popular. It's the common view of the times. Don't take it as true because it's in the scriptures, sacred texts. Don't take it as a criteria for what is true because it's logical. You've worked it out logically, and therefore it must be this way. Used reason. Don't go by intuition, preferences. And don't go by the reason of competence of the speaker. So a speaker who's very competent and eloquent and clear and seems to really understand what's happening, don't just simply believe it because you think that speaker knows. And then finally, don't believe something's true or untrue because the person saying it is your teacher. So at this moment, I'm your teacher, in a sense. I'm teaching and you're listening. So please don't take what I'm saying as either true or false. Just because I say it is not a reliable source of to really know for yourself this is true or false. And in replying this way, before he replies this way, the Buddha says to the Kalamas, it's reasonable that you should have doubts about what is true and not true. So he really appreciates them. They're coming to him with this question. So he gives this list of things, what not to go by. And then he offers his own criteria. And so here, not the criteria for what is maybe what is true and not true, but maybe this is implied, but probably what the Buddha is doing here is if that's the case, he's changing the whole, either changing what is defined, what he means, what's meant by truth, or he has his own idea of what truth is, which he doesn't explain in the text, or he's simply changing the flow of the conversation to be what he emphasizes instead of focusing on what is true and not true. That what is religiously true and religiously not true as statements, as beliefs, as something that's a little bit outside of oneself, that's not his interest. And rather, he says that here's the Buddha's criteria. Is that, is it harmful or beneficial? Both in and of itself, and also he says, does it lead to harm or does it lead to welfare? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? And do the people who you think are wise, are they critical of this or not critical of this? So it doesn't mean that you take what the wise say as being true, but you do have respect for what their point of view. And if they're critical of something, then maybe it's time to look more carefully and pause. Is it praised by the wise? And then maybe you don't necessarily believe it then either, but maybe then it's worthy of further investigation. So but the core thing here, is it harmful or beneficial? And I can't underscore how much and how I think wonderfully this is the central kind of pivot or orientation that the Buddha has. He's not so interested in religious truth, religious doctrine, but rather he's interested in what we can know for ourselves that is harmful, that brings harm or brings welfare. It's a radical thing to fully brought all forms of harming to an end in ourselves. I mean, what a fantastic thing. You look at read the newspapers and see how much harm human beings are inflicting on each other. And then there's, you know, vast amounts more harm that never makes it into the newspapers, into the news. And to be a person who doesn't inflict harm on themselves or someone else is a phenomenal thing. I think it's like, you know, a gymnast at the gymnastics, you know, it's such a beautiful, such an amazing thing to have worked through and found a way where there's no inclination, no tendency to cause harm. And maybe it's the opposite. We are inclined to do what's beneficial, what brings welfare to ourselves and to someone else. And so there are all kinds of lofty religious states we can attain. There's all kinds of wonderful perspectives on life and experiences we can have that people say are spiritual or religious. And these aren't to be devalued in and of themselves. But I think in these criteria that Buddha has, one wants to be careful not to assume that that gives us a privileged access to what is true and what is false, unless it has taught us something. From the Buddha's point of view, be very careful. For the Buddha, those states also are evaluated, looked at. What does this teach us about how to live a life that is beneficial, that avoids harm? Over and over again, that's what the Buddha is interested in. So you could, in modern English ideas, say the Buddha is more interested in ethics than he is in religion. He's interested in how people act and how people behave, and to do so both behave with our bodies, our speech, and also in our minds that don't cause any harm. But what makes it kind of beyond ethics is that is the thoroughness in which the Buddha points to that's possible to do this. That the level of peace, the level of well-being and happiness, the level of freedom that's possible when there's no inclination to cause any harm is an experience of radical non-clinging, non-compulsion, of freedom and liberation. And so this potential, this possibility, which is kind of a phenomenal human capacity and possibility. But it doesn't matter if we take the Buddha's path all the way to its end. What matters is that we're practicing a life of doing what is beneficial, avoiding what is harmful, and to do it in a beneficial way. So part of this teaching then also is not only beneficial and harmful, but also to really make a distinction between what is unwholesome and wholesome. And that is going to be the theme for the next couple of weeks on these 7 a.m. sittings and teachings. Is I want to look at this very important topic that the Buddha, concept of the Buddha, of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. This week it'll be that. And there's an alternative translation for this Pali word kusala, K-U-S-U-L-A. So sometimes it's translated as wholesome and unwholesome, and sometimes it's translated as skillful and unskillful. And for this first week, I want to look at it as wholesome and unwholesome, and next week as skillful and unskillful. And this is a pivotal orientation for all of the Buddha's teachings. And to really understand this idea of kusala and akusala and understand it well gives you access to really begin kind of, it's like the key to understanding so much of what the Buddha is about. And if you understand the two things together, the avoidance of harm and doing what is beneficial and the notion of wholesome and unwholesome, then you're well on the way to discover what the Buddha is all about, independent of feeling that you have to know what is ultimately, religiously, and doctrinally true. You're on the way to become a person who is true, true in that they're free of the causes of harm and filled with these beneficial ways of being in the world. So that's an introduction for what's coming up, and I look forward to our time together, and thank you.